Greetings once again to you, my fellow man from Denver, Colorado, the city right here in the middle of it all. You may have heard the news, but stand by now for the worldview. Welcome back, one and all, to the Weekly Worldview. I am your host, Doug McBurney. This is the show where we don't take calls, we don't tolerate sponsors, but we do take the events of the week and focus them through the lens of original thought. It's so good to have you. I'm still all a buzz from the, well, it wasn't a top secret meeting, but it was a festival, a banquet last night where a lot of inside information was exchanged on the personhood issue. We had a chance to hear Lila Rose. Very impressive young lady from out in California who is carrying the Colorado Personhood, not Colorado, the California Personhood Initiative out there in the great state of California. Her and Walter Hoy and the California Civil Rights Foundation will be having a press conference tomorrow introducing language to amend the California state constitution to declare that every human being is a person in the eyes of the law. From the beginning of the biological development of that person. So it was just phenomenal. It was phenomenal to see and to hear what's happening around the country. 29 states now are pursuing personhood. And people think we're crazy. And that really blows me away because, 50 years ago, it was a de facto, it was understood that a human being, whether in the womb or 3 days old or 3 months old or 99 years old was a person and had legal rights. And so I don't think we're crazy. I think the rest of the world is crazy. Anyway, Lila Rose and Walter Hoy will be having their press conference tomorrow. And finally, I think the news media, once we get on the ballot in California, once we begin collecting signatures, they just can't ignore us anymore. I think. I hope. I really do. But I've got, more other news than I can possibly get to. I hate it when this happens. You know, I spend an entire week gathering news and analyzing it from a biblical Christian conservative worldview, not a crazy worldview, a worldview that used to be considered sane and rational and normal, which is now considered outside the mainstream, maybe even considered fringe. But I don't think it's fringe to say that every person has certain inalienable rights, and among them are life, liberty, and property, and other things. Anyway, so coming to you from the fringe out here in Denver, Colorado, I want to go right to the news. Dateline New York, from the Reuters Wire, U.S. Secretary of State Hillary Rodham Clinton said last week that ousted President of Honduras, ousted Honduran President Manuel Zelaya, and the de facto government there must find a way to talk and avoid violence following his return to the Central American nation. That's similar to what aides tell Hillary whenever Bill returns home from a trip. Please, find a way to talk and avoid violence. Anyway, so what's the news there? There's really no news. But you got to give Obama credit for putting Hillary on a shelf where she can really do him no harm. That basically he installed her as Secretary of State, and then I think he's installed five or six czars to actually do her job. So she does get to release a press release once in a while, but that's about all Hill is doing these days. Dateline Washington, D.C., Bill Clinton, that's right, the other Clinton, Hillary's husband. Bill Clinton says a vast right-wing conspiracy that once targeted him is now focusing on our president, Barry Ho, Barack Obama. Yes, Bill Clinton was asked on NBC's Meet the Press whether the conspiracy is still there. And Bubba Bill Jeff replied, you bet, sure it is, man. It's not as strong as it was, you know, because America has changed demographically, but it's as virulent as ever. Virulent as it ever was. Not unlike a kiss from Bubba Bill Jeff. Virulent. For all of you who went to public school, you can just look that up. Virulent, I said. All right. Now let's continue through the politics file, as exciting as it all is. All of these political, all this political mumbo jumbo just seems to pale in comparison to what's happening on the effort to restore human rights to all human beings in the United States. But I will soldier on. Dateline New York from the Associated Press. The importance of gender equality took center stage last Wednesday at the Bubba Bill Jeff Clinton Global Initiative as speakers emphasized how investing in girls and women can have repercussions at all levels of a society. The Clinton Global Initiative, you'll remember, started by former President Bubba Bill Jeff Clinton, brings together the public and private sector to discuss solutions to problems in four areas. What are the four areas, you might wonder? You might not really care, but I'm going to tell you anyway. The Clinton Global Initiative focuses on four areas: climate change, poverty, global health, and education. Well, I guess it's five areas now. Women also. Gender equality, women. Women, an area where Bubba Bill Jeff has a particular interest, as we all know. Now, Clinton opened the morning session by highlighting a number of commitments that had been made in the area of empowering women and emphasized the importance of the issue. He said, quote, "Whether the issue is improving the involvement of young women and girls in education, to climate change, and all political, economic, and social issues in between, I think empowering women is central to what the world has to do in the 21st century, if you know what I mean." Now, former Vice President Albert Gore was scheduled to speak on a panel about the need for, quote, innovation to create sustainable development. So that was the topic of Al Gore's PowerPoint presentation. Innovation to create sustainable development. Now, can you imagine the staff of useless interns and geeks assigned to write up this lecture for Al Gore? Can you just imagine the squad of nerds and losers and people who are basically useless to anyone in the business community? So they get jobs and they're probably making, you know, $75,000 a year to write PowerPoints for Al Gore on innovation to create sustainable development. And they actually think they're doing something good for society. It's just sad. All those years of college wasted writing speeches for Al Gore. What else do we have on the Clinton Global Initiative? Attendees at the conference are expected to make concrete commitments on steps they will take to work on global problems. Now, since the first conference of the Clinton Global Initiative, 1,400 commitments have been made. Yes, a lot of commitments. Yeah. Also, we've documented this. In the meetings of the Clinton Global Initiative, 1 million pounds of jet fuel have been burned, 20 tons of shrimp have been eaten, 30,000 gallons of champagne has been drunk, 2,200 venereal diseases have been exchanged, and 6,000 grams of cocaine has been snorted. That's the Clinton Global Initiative. Now let's move on through the politics file. From the CBS News, the United Nations Summit on Climate Change apparently is taking place or has taken place. I can honestly tell you I haven't followed the story as close as our friends at CBS, and I'm glad that they're on top of it. Now, but they say over at CBS that the United Nations, the UN Summit on Climate Change, has left quite the carbon footprint on the planet. Yeah. They say every time they have the UN Summit on Clinton Climate Change, did I say Clinton Climate Change? I didn't mean that. The UN Summit on Climate Change, Midtown Manhattan becomes the motorcade capital of the world. Each foreign leader in town has a convoy of vehicles. Some of them, like President Barry Ho's motorcade, are 20 to 30 vehicles in length. And the question CBS asks, does it undermine the goal of the climate change summit and cause the pledges of environmental concern to ring hollow? I guess that's a rhetorical question. Isn't it obvious that these are a bunch of hypocrites in driving V8 bulletproof Lincoln Continentals and Cadillac Escalades? Isn't it obvious? Well, when asked about it, White House climate change negotiator Todd Stern, he's a climate change negotiator. I wonder how many years he spent at university and how many degrees this fellow holds to become a climate change negotiator. Anyway, his name is Todd Stearns, and he says, quote, I think the UN should make a pledge to electric vehicle motorcades within 5 years. That's great, Todd. Now, who is Todd Stearns, I wonder? He's probably the next guy who's going to be exposed as a stone Marxist fascist over at the Glenn Beck Show. So I guess we'll keep our eye on, see if Ted Stearns comes up on the radar, see if there's any undercover video shot of him in the not-too-distant future. All right, on to the political follies, through the political folly file. And this is not really that lighthearted. President Obama's science czar contended in a textbook he co-authored that involuntary birth control measures, including forced sterilization, may be necessary and morally acceptable under certain conditions, such as widespread famine brought about by climate change. John Holdren, who I think is the favorite target now of one Mr. Glenn Beck over there, Holdren argued in the 1970s college textbook, Your Eco-Science, Population, Resources, Environment. Did I get that right? Is that the name of a textbook? Eco-Science, colon, Population, Resources, Environment. He argued that compulsory control of family size is an unpalatable idea, but the alternatives may be much more horrifying. The book, last revised in 1977, was co-authored with Malthusian Paul Ehrlich and Ehrlich's demented wife, Anne. The authors also advocated abortion as an acceptable form of population control and proposed that the best survival strategy for a pregnant woman is to abort her baby. That's what this is. The who is this guy? The science czar. The science czar. That's a little bit scary. Does this guy actually have any power in the government of the United States of America, the freest country on the face of the earth? The last great hope for humanity? He thinks that the best survival strategy for a pregnant woman is to abort her baby? Anyway, I hope Glenn Beck takes this guy out. I mean, I suppose Glenn Beck would be doing a favor to all of us. If he what's the guy's name? John Holdren. Okay, so let's keep our eye on him. Paul Ehrlich. Isn't he the one who wrote that we would all be dead by now? Or at least starving or extremely uncomfortable? Anyway, the Malthusians are back. The return of the Malthusians. Malthus revenge, so to speak. In the form of Barry Ho's czars. It's just bizarre, speaking of czars. All right, now finally, from the politics file. After struggling to turn Muammar Gaddafi's insane ramblings at the United Nations into English for 75 minutes, the Libyan dictator's personal interpreter lost it. He shouted into a live microphone after 75 minutes. He said, I just can't take it anymore. He shouted that in Arabic right into a live mic. At that point, the UN's Arabic section chief, Rasha Ajalik Yaya Queen, took over and translated the final 20 minutes of Muammar Gaddafi's rather incoherent, rambling, semi-lucid, insane speech. Another UN Arabic interpreter told the New York Post that Gaddafi's interpreter just collapsed. This is the first time I've seen this in 25 years. So now this wasn't a UN interpreter who collapsed. This is Muammar Gaddafi's personal interpreter who he brought over on the plane with him. This is a guy who works day in and day out with Gaddafi, one would think, unless he just got the job because the last interpreter maybe had a similar issue and was, you know, summarily tied to a post and shot in the head. I'm not sure how Muammar Gaddafi handles mistakes that the translators might make. Anyway, I hope this guy has applied for asylum or something and that he doesn't have to fly back home with Muammar. We'll be right back. That is the riff. That guitar riff inspired 10,000 young boys in 1982 to learn how to play guitar. I mean, that's just a great riff. What can you say? Anyway, let's move on. Do I want to go on with the news? I really can't. There's not much very funny or much very entertaining. I mean, my mind is just elsewhere. It's just on bigger issues, you know, than these bozos over at the UN and at the Clinton climate control collapse and wherever else these people are just spreading their virulent brand of fascism. I want to, you know, my wife and my kids, my wife and my three daughters have taken to watching Little House on the Prairie reruns on cable. What's that?
In Japan.
Oh, no, my wife didn't make it to Japan. No. She decided she couldn't live without me. Actually, we missed the flight, which we don't do very often. And I don't want to get into all the details of what happened in the missing of the flight to San Francisco, which eventually would have taken her to Tokyo and then on to Okinawa. But missing that first leg caused some significant problems. But there was a series of events that seemed to have been orchestrated. And for some things, we prefer to just accept the idea of predestination and just assume that it was just meant to be, that it was God's will that my wife, Takako, did not get on that plane, and that we stood in a security line for approximately 45 minutes, which seemed like 4,000 years, because I check my watch every 30 seconds, and every time we moved 7 or 8 inches, I thought, we're never going to make this plane. But you don't give up hope. And at a certain point, by the time we were in the security line, my wife and I actually hated each other because I had done a couple of things to mess this whole situation up. She had done maybe one or two things to mess it up. So we're just looking at each other just going, I hate you. I can't believe I'm standing in this line with you with these three children who are just unbelievably sad. It was probably the longest 45 minutes to an hour of my entire life, and my wife's as well. And when I say we hated each other, I mean that rhetorically.
We didn't really
hate each other. She didn't know that. So I guess it was only me.
It was
only me.
Oh, great.
I was filled with a virulent anger.
We have a serious talk.
And we're going to have a serious talk after the show. Anyway, we missed the flight. It was a tragedy of epic proportion. And do I want to say something about United Airlines? Should we address United Airlines? I just want to encourage everyone in the audience, please do not fly United Airlines. I will do my best to never fly United Airlines again for a number of reasons. Let's not get into it because I don't want to get sued by United Airlines. But let's just say they're not as helpful as they could be. You know, we got a lot more help from the Japanese airline after we got home 7 hours after leaving the house. We got back home and my lovely bride got on the phone with the Japanese airline, and they were actually able to help us to rebook. They actually felt sorry for us. They quelled the hatred that was building inside of me. And anyway, we've since gotten on with our life, and my lovely and extremely attractive audio engineer is once again here in the studio. And so I'm glad to have her here. But I wish we hadn't had to go through that, because that was not fun. But anyway, I was going to talk about Little House on the Prairie, which is much more important, wouldn't you agree? So where my wife and daughters are watching Little House on the Prairie during the day while I'm at work and after school is out. And last week's broadcast, a Little House on the Prairie was plumbing the depths of racist feelings held by Mrs. Olson and others, you know, back in the turn of the century West. And you know, my wife realized that Nicole, our eight-year-old, she didn't understand the plot. She couldn't quite understand what was happening as Mrs. Olson and other society types treated the black people with a lot less respect and less kindness than their white counterparts on the broadcast. And so about halfway through the show, Takako stopped to explain to Nicole what was happening on the on Little House on the Prairie. And she very tactfully explained, here's the thing, is that my daughter, Nicole, has no concept of racism. None whatsoever. Doesn't understand it. And so, you know, the last thing you want to do when a kid starts asking questions is plant any seeds of racism. And so Takaka was very, she had a very good strategery, so to speak. She explained to Nicole that back in the old West in America, you know, people came from Africa and they were poor and they were different. And a lot of people, upper class types, people who were already here, just didn't like them and they treated them badly. And Takako didn't really discuss race with her. And then Nicole kind of, she understood, you know, for the rest of the show. And anyway, I just thought it was neat. Takako told me that story and I thought it was really cool that, you know, our daughter doesn't really, you know, and I hope that's true for most of our kids out there, that they really have no innate sense of racism. I hope that's true. You know, because I know that by the time I was 8 years old, I was familiar with all the racial slurs that were applied to black people. And I, you know, the seeds were planted really early in my mind, and it's something that I'm sure has affected me as I've grown and interacted with other people my entire life. Because I grew up in a culture where racism was just, you know, kind of part of the daily conversation of my youth. And I just, you know, Barry Ho aside, the fact that, you know, the Barry Ho and the liberals and the progressives, they seem to want to introduce race at every moment. Despite that, I think that we've made some progress, is all I'm trying to say. And you know, our next door neighbor, that person is really acting like a baby here in the studio again. But we love the sound of a crying baby, don't we? We don't mind that at all. You just want to be on the air, don't you? Yeah, okay. That's Alexis. How old is she? She's 5 months old. And she already wants to be on the air. But anyway, our next-door neighbor had a birthday party that my daughter attended. It would have been a multiculturalist fantasy. Because there was a, let's see, there was a half-Japanese, half-Irish kid. There was a black kid. There was a Chinese kid. And there was a white kid. Just, what were we missing? Oh, no Latinos. No, you can't say Mexican, honey. Latino. Well, if they're coming from Mexico, I suppose you could say Mexican, but it's much more sensitive to say Latino. And say it with that accent, or it's not acceptable. Latino. There was no Latina. It's a girl. It was an all-girl birthday bash next door. Just a, you know, except we left out the Latinas, but it was unintentional. And we apologize if we offended anyone. Anyway, it was something to see, I'll tell you what. Now, how did I get off? Oh, yeah, I got off on that because I just don't care about the news. But let me try. Let me make an effort here. I know that there are certain expectations out there that we're going to talk about significant cultural and political issues. And so let's go to Rich in Canada. This is an email from a listener. Greetings, Doug. I'm just writing to let you know that your justice system could be worse. It could be the Canadian justice system. Today, we had a sentencing of two teenagers who decided it would be fun to burn down a former Christian school. They tried to burn it to the ground, apparently. He said they were sentenced, and what do you think the sentence was? He says, was it flogging? He says, oh, no, 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 oh, dear, that would offend people. Was it restitution? No. Was it jail? And he says, Doug, I know that you and even Bob Enyart would say that a jail sentence is not biblical, and probably you would have liked option one and two better. He says, these two punks who burned a Christian school to the ground, they got 2 years probation, and they will also need to complete 240 hours of community service. Doug, I believe that is one very light sentence, but the criminal lawyer complained to the judge that the 240 hours of community service having to be completed in 11 months was too harsh of a sentence. Let's see. Further conditions to their sentence included providing a DNA sample, abiding curfews, and to not associate each other except for sanctioned school athletic activities. Okay. Doug, right here is the problem. Maybe they should be pulled out of the public school system completely. I believe there are some wonderful reform schools in Alabama. That'd be quite the culture shock for our two Canadian miscreants here. Reform school in Alabama. Doug, if I take up a collection for their bus fare to Denver, do you think that you and Bob Enyart would be able to administer an appropriate spanking? He says, our justice system, oops, just a system, just can't get the job done. At Rich, I feel for you up there in Canada, but I don't think that sending them south of the border is going to do any good here at all. They would probably be just, you know, have to get some counseling and then doing community service. What's the deal with community service? When someone does something bad, you force them to do something good as part of their punishment? That doesn't seem to make any sense to me. And I'm sorry, if you burn a building to the ground, to me, that's putting the community in danger of severe bodily harm, even death. You never know what's going to happen once a building goes up in flames. So I think the two young men here should be executed. Forget flogging, forget restitution. They should be executed. Forget reform school in Alabama. So, Rich, that I've rendered my judgment, and I'll touch base with Bob Enyart. We might want to cane them first. I doubt it. Probably just go ahead and execute them. All right. Anyway, so that's Canada for you. Thank you, Rich. And I think Rich is up there in Ontario. Well, the story was from Ontario. Rich just says he's from Canada. He doesn't want to, parts unknown. He doesn't necessarily want to let anybody know where he is up there. Because if they find out he's listening to this show, they might just come and kick his door down and take his computers away. I think we're banned in Canada, if you read their broadcast and internet rules carefully. I don't think we're allowed to be there. We're sneaking in under the radar. So, Rich, don't blow our cover, but we appreciate the report from Canada. Now on to the culture file. Dateline Los Angeles, California, from the Associated Press. The Los Angeles Student Council has passed an ordinance that, with a few exceptions, allows only one rooster per property. When I first read this, it said L.A., and I assumed it meant Louisiana. I mean, they're talking about roosters. But it's not. It's Los Angeles, California. Neighborhoods from the harbor to the San Fernando Valley are sometimes annoyed by concerts from crowing roosters early in the morning. A real estate developer there says tenants of his Panorama City development have had to turn up their TVs and even wear earplugs because of the roosters in Los Angeles. Anyway, I guess they're trying to... why are they doing this? They're trying to give the neighbors peace and quiet, and I'm not sure why else they would be... They have concerns over hygiene and illegal cockfighting. Yeah. Well, you know what I think the solution is? Legalize cockfighting and just say that you can only have roosters in a certain part of town. You know? Well, maybe cockfighting. I don't know. I can't even watch boxing anymore. I used to love boxing, but now I look at it as two men beating each other, and I don't know. I just can't get into it. Like the whole Ultimate Fighting thing. I don't know. I've just lost my killer instinct, I guess. I don't know. So I see. So there's concerns about cockfighting. Now that makes a little more sense, knowing the general tenor of life there in Los Angeles. The law takes effect in November and carries fines up to $250. So a second rooster, it's like checking a second bag on United Airlines. $250 fine for a second rooster. I wonder what they do for a third rooster and a fourth rooster. And what if you have a hen who's laying eggs? I mean, how do you... It looks like there's a lot of money to be made in this racket that they got going, fining people for having chickens in Los Angeles. Anyway, I wasn't aware there was a problem, but if any of you out there are thinking about moving to Los Angeles, you might want to keep this in mind. There's not really a point to the story. Oh, I don't think the government should be fining people for poultry levels. I think it's a conflict of interest, you know? I mean, the government shouldn't be making money off criminal activity. But what is the appropriate punishment for having an inappropriate number of roosters? Now, that's a challenge. Is it inherently immoral to have more than one rooster in Los Angeles? I don't think so. But if you're annoying your neighbors with a lot of noise, now that's a problem. I think we need to do something. There needs to be some type of surgery available for roosters so that they quiet them down or something. I don't know. Okay, we've gone far enough with that story. That's Los Angeles, California. All right, now let's go across the pond over to our good friends in the United Kingdom. From the UK Sun, they have a survey in England called the National Kids Day Survey, and they surveyed 1,600 children under 10 years old and asked them who they thought was the most famous person in the world. Now, who do you think was voted the most famous person in the world in the United Kingdom? Any guesses?
Joe Elliott?
Who is Joe Elliott? Joe Elliott? Oh. All right, I'm not going to say, but if any of you out there know who Joe Elliott is, email us because we should be friends because we're probably the only ones who know. No, I'm just kidding. Anyway, the winner was Simon Cowell. Simon Cowell, who's a judge on a show called The X Factor over there in Britain. Guess who came in number two? God. And the Queen came in third. So Simon Cowell is more famous in Britain than God. Now you'll remember, the UK Sun tells us, John Lennon was lambasted back in the 60s when he quipped that the Beatles had become bigger than Jesus. But perhaps his claim wasn't so outlandish after all. And this is just a commentary on the state of post-Christian England. Simon Cowell finishes ahead of God in a survey of English children, proving that John Lennon was indeed correct. As wicked and evil as he was correct in his assessment that pop culture has become bigger than God in England. Worldview, and I am Doug McBurney, back from Britain. Speaking of Britain, we're going to continue in the culture file right there in the good old United Kingdom. Dateline London from the Reuters Wire. They say it used to be an issue just for the terminally ill, but with populations around the world aging, governments are increasingly being confronted with a taboo idea of dying as something people can volunteer to do. Yes, I said dying is something that people can volunteer to do. And according to Dr. Philip Nitschke, the founder and director of the pro-euthanasia group Exit International, he says the demand for the option, that the option being suicide, if not the practice of suicide, is growing rapidly. He's an Australian doctor, and he's been nicknamed Dr. Death for his work on suicide. He's traveling around the world to teach people how to end their lives safely with suicide drugs. I guess that means you kill yourself without getting an ancillary infection. I'm not sure. Anyway, so there's the state of England. Simon Cowell is bigger than the Lord, and Britons are demanding the right to kill themselves. And whether they demand the right or not, whether they realize it or not, they are killing themselves. And they're basically killing off Western civilization, at least the British element of it. And it's sad to see them go. Tally-ho, old chat. And on that issue, deeper into the culture file, The Un, I believe this came from The Un. I suppose I'll just read the story from Reuters. Experts have concluded that unchecked population growth is speeding climate change, damaging life-nurturing ecosystems, and dooming many countries to poverty. Yes. Yes, they warn that unless birth rates are lowered sharply through voluntary family planning programs and easy access to contraceptives, the tally of humans on Earth could swell to an unsustainable 11 billion by the year 2050. Yes. 11 billion. Unsustainable. I can't remember what Paul Ehrlich said was unsustainable. But I'm assuming we've surpassed... well, let's find out. Well, the researchers said that with 1.5 million more humans climbing aboard the planet every week, a recipe is looming for ecological overload, famine, and broken states. We have a quote here from Malcolm Potts at the University of California at Berkeley. He says, continued rapid population growth in many of the least developed countries could lead to hunger, a failure of education, and conflict. And that's what a University of California at Berkeley professor thinks could happen. Well, I would like to assert that it could also lead to a global renaissance of peace, art, and fine literature. It could. It depends on the people, okay? It's not the fault of the babies being born. It's the fault of the psychotic, suicidal maniacs influencing the culture into which these children are absorbed. And, of course, I'm talking about the children who survive the abortion holocaust that's been going on. Some people say, well, we shouldn't call it a holocaust. You know, the holocaust is a singular event in human history. And to compare what's happening with abortion to the holocaust is to diminish the holocaust. I can't remember who said that. It was a Jewish host on radio. I think it was Michael Medved, who scolds anyone who compares abortion to the holocaust. And I think Mr. Medved has it exactly inverted. The Holocaust was a singular event in human history in which 6 million Jews were slaughtered, and I believe well over 10 million human beings in total were slaughtered by the Nazi regime. But in abortion, with abortion just here in the United States, the toll is 50 million. 50 million, I said. Around the world, how many hundreds of millions? How many? How many? So how can you diminish the Holocaust from World War II by comparing it to a Holocaust that is far greater? Orders of magnitude more innocent people have been killed in the abortion Holocaust than were killed by the Germans. Not to diminish what happened in Nazi Germany in any way, but I think the comparison is apt, is all I'm saying. So what else do these main maniacal, suicidal Euro-fascists have to say? Let's see, these papers that were reported, that are being reported on here as if they have some basis in truth, were authored by 42 specialists in environmental science, economics, and demography, and they were published by the Royal Society, which is Britain's de facto Academy of Sciences. They say it was summarized by Roger Short, a professor at the University of Melbourne in Australia. He said, there is no doubt that the current rate of human population growth is unsustainable. Yeah, where have we heard this before? I wish Mr. Short would start with himself. Please, Mr. Short, just get out. You're unsustainable. I'm tired of sustaining people like you. He says, 98% of the expected population growth will occur in developing countries, especially Africa, where numbers are set to double. So it's the African. Yep. So here we have a bunch of European old fat white guys complaining that there are just too many Africans. He needs to sit down and have a conversation with my 8-year-old daughter, you moron. There aren't too many Africans. There's bad government in Africa. There's paganism and heathenism in Africa. Africa needs good government and it needs good religion. And then they can have as many people as they want. And it goes the same for England and Australia and even Berkeley. I'm willing to let Berkeley go. So another member of Britain's House of Lords, one Adair Turner, asked the question, how is Niger going to feed a population growing from 11 million today to 50 million in 2050 in a semi-arid country that may be facing adverse climate change? Well, Mr. Turner, how about ask the Jews in Israel? Okay, they went over there to a hard-baked dust bowl. And if you've ever driven through the Jordan Valley, It blooms, okay? So just ask the Jews. They'll figure it out for you. Oh, these guys might think there's too many Jews, too. I know that that's a common thought among people who think there are too many Africans. They tend to think there are also too many Jews. So maybe they won't ask the Jews. But I think the Jews could figure out how to make Niger bloom. And given half a chance, I'm sure we all will together. Now, concern about population growth, Reuters tells us, is not new. It was most famously articulated by a British mathematician, Thomas Malthus, who in 1798, when Earth was home to about 1 billion people, calculated that exponential growth would eventually lead to famine. Now, Malthus' dire warnings were widely taken seriously until the advent of mechanized farming, at which point Malthus was considered a Malthusian, which, as far as I remember, has always been an insult, at least in my circle of friends. Yeah, a Malthusian, not a good thing to be. So mechanized farming, Malthus didn't see that one coming. He didn't see that men, when allowed to live in peace and liberty, would figure out ways not only to feed themselves, but to feed their neighbors. We could even feed the Africans, Tom. anyway. This report says, relentlessly rising demand, diminishing farmland, depleted fish stocks, falling water tables, and the threat of climate change have in recent years placed the Malthusian dilemma back on the table. I'm so scared. Let's see. Family planning programs. The article concludes. Family planning programs in China and India have veered into forced sterilizations and coercive abortions, which some feel breaches human rights. Some feel. Yeah. The sane people think that that violates human rights. Anyway, the researchers acknowledge that there are problems with China's policy. But they also pointed out that without its one-child policy, China would have an extra 300 to 400 million mouths to feed. So Michael Medved says that we shouldn't compare the Holocaust to abortion. 300 to 400 million in China. How many in India? Another 100 million? Another 200 million? Maybe another 300 million? Here in America, 50 million. Across Europe, 50 more. So what are we talking here? Are we talking a billion people yet killed? Has there ever been another crime in the history of humanity in which nearly a billion people, innocent people, have been killed? You know, our enemies have pulled off one of the most diabolical crimes in all of recorded history. Killing near a billion people worldwide, legally, and then teaching the survivors that what they were doing was not only good, but it should be celebrated and even codified as a right in the state constitutions of various nations. Indeed, a diabolical crime has been committed, a crime that certainly is akin to the vision that Adolf Hitler had. And hopefully the tide is turning. Hopefully with personhood, the tide is turning. Let's see here. Roman Polanski has been arrested. And do I care that Roman Polanski has been arrested? Well, I think it's a good thing that he's been arrested. Let's see. Polanski, what happened here? How did Roman get himself in trouble? I thought he was in France. He's been facing extradition to the United States for 30 years for violating a 13-year-old girl back in 1977. Now, he was on his way to a festival in Switzerland where he was scheduled to receive an honorary award. Of course. Roman Polanski, a bankrupt, deviant pervert, was on his way to receive a reward, an award, an honorary award at a festival there in Switzerland. Swiss authorities have taken him into custody. The Swiss statement said Polanski was in provisional detention for extradition. Polanski has not been extradited from France because his crime reportedly was not covered under treaties between the United States and France. And, of course, because France just loves deviants, apparently. Let's see. In Paris, Culture Minister Frédéric Mitterrand said that he was dumbfounded by Polanski's arrest, adding that he strongly regrets that a new ordeal is being inflicted on someone who has already experienced so many ordeals. Oh, yeah? Yeah, Roman. Well, just wait till Judgment Day, Mr. Polanski, and Mr. Mitterrand for you as well. Just wait till Judgment Day. You think you've seen some ordeals. Anyway, this brings us to our Bible verses for the day. Warning, 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 Will Robinson, there are Bible verses up ahead. For those in the audience who advocate pluralism and diversity, we know here at the Weekly Worldview that you would not tolerate anyone who would ever dare quote a Bible verse in public, so this warning gives you fair notice that raw, unadulterated truth is about to be uttered. And we'll go to Matthew and the 18th chapter and the 6th verse when Jesus Christ himself says, warns everyone, he says, whoever causes one of these little ones who believes in me to sin, it would be better for him if a millstone were hung around his neck and he were drowned in the depths of the sea. Woe to the world because of offenses, for offenses must come, but woe to that man by whom the offense comes. So that was a warning for Roman Polanski. And I've got another verse here, too, that I want to take us to. And that's going to be in Luke. And that is the 8th chapter. Let's go to Luke chapter 8. If you have your Bible with you, feel free to turn to Luke chapter 8, verse 17. Jesus Christ again says, for nothing in secret, there is nothing in secret that will not be revealed, nor anything hidden that will not be known and come to light. Therefore, take heed how you hear. For whoever has, to him more will be given. And whomever does not have, even what he seems to have, will be taken from him. A lot of blues on Judgment Day. A lot of blues on Judgment Day. If Roman Polanski don't repent, if the French don't repent, if the English don't repent, and if the God blessed United States of America don't repent either, it's going to be a flood on Judgment Day. All right. So there goes Roman Polanski. Down into the culture file, literally down into the culture file, I've got a story from Las Vegas that is an addendum to a story we did from Los Angeles a few weeks ago. There's a secret community living in the dark and dirty underground flood tunnels below the famous Las Vegas Strip. People live there despite the risks from disease, highly venomous spiders, and floods washing them away. Many of the tunnel people have put together elaborate camps with furniture, ornaments, and shelves filled with various belongings. So these are more modern-day cavemen in the United States of America. This comes to us from the Las Vegas Sun. There's the flood control tunnel that the reporter toured has an art gallery, he calls it. It's a collection of graffiti by local artists and some by the underground cave dwellers themselves. Now, Las Vegas cave dwellers, how do they live, you might wonder? I'm sure it's on a steady diet of cigarettes and methamphetamine, but other than that, how do they make a living, you might wonder? Well, one caveman says, we work our way down the strip, and we do what's called credit hustling. Yeah, credit hustling. And that's where they go to machines, and they try to find either money or credits left in the slot machines by drunken gamblers. And I'll bet in Vegas that's pretty good pickings. This caveman says the most he's ever found is $997. He found that on one machine. He says, I found about $500 a few times, but normally $20 or so is enough to call it a night. He's a real go-getter. Caveman doesn't, Doesn't take much, you know. He hasn't set the bar really high. He can get enough for a bottle of Thunderbird and whatever it takes to get him through the night. About $20. Anyway, he says, we also buy food and supplies like shampoo and soap. Oh, there's a surprise. They buy shampoo and soap, the cavemen down there. Now, it's estimated, according to the Las Vegas Sun, it's estimated the population of the underground caveman community could be as many as 700. And as well as credit hustling, they earn their money off the wildly excessive city above by begging and dumpster diving. Yeah, real go-getters. There are around 350 miles of flood channels running under Las Vegas, and they're being inhabited by modern-day cavemen. And if you're not familiar with my theory on cavemen, you know, we've found evidence of cavemen throughout history, but I don't think it's evidence that we evolved from cavemen. I think that it's evidence that at certain times, certain groups have devolved into cavemen in all manner of society throughout history. The losers, you know, the scum of the earth, so to speak. Let's see, there. The Las Vegas Sun says the main dangers to the cavemen in Las Vegas are the floods and the black widow spiders. But cavemen say it's not a terrible place to be if you're homeless. They say it's much cooler than on the street. We get a breeze coming through and the cops don't really bother you. It's quiet and everyone helps each other out down here. I mean, how detached from the concept of really helping one's neighbor are these people? I mean, you're helping people devolve into cavemen, dwelling underneath the city, begging, stealing, and doing drugs. I mean, and you think that you're helping each other out? I mean, obviously the fella hasn't had a really healthy relationship in quite some time. Anyway, the cavemen of Las Vegas, taking their place in history alongside the cavemen out in Los Angeles, taking their place with the cavemen of all history. Now, one more from the culture file. This caught my eye. From the Associated Press out in New York, some abortion rights activists, I like how they call them that. These are abortion rights activists, right? So these are people who advocate the legalized killing of other innocent people, okay? But we'll just go with the AP's characterization because I don't want to get bogged down in minutia. For some abortion rights advocates, the debate over health care reform has been frustrating, even disheartening, as they see their political allies on the defensive and their anti-abortion rivals on the attack. So the anti-abortion rivals, that's us. That's the people who think innocent people should not be killed ever, but especially under color of law. There should be no legalized killing of innocent people. We're called anti-abortion. Okay, and I'm fine with that, I suppose. Anyway, many in the abortion rights movement had hoped that a health care overhaul would include a serious discussion of expanding access to abortion for especially low-income women. And I'm adding this, but I think especially low-income women of African descent. You know how those Africans are. There's just too many of those Africans. Anyway, they think that the healthcare overhaul would have included the possible lifting of a 33-year-old ban on federal funding for abortion, except in cases of rape, incest, and to save the mother's life. So that's known as the Hyde Amendment. Are you all familiar with the Hyde Amendment? That's an amendment passed by Republicans who want to fool pro-life Americans who believe innocent people shouldn't be killed. It's a Republican scam. It helps them hide. It's a Hyde Amendment. It's where you hide all the evidence to the contrary and fund as many abortions as you possibly can. Because the exceptions here, rape, incest, save the life of the mother, you can drive a truck through that. Okay? And Lila Rose, if you've seen some of the undercover video that she's done at liveaction.com, shows us how Planned Parenthood basically works hard to get around the law and to make sure that if whatever state laws there are to limit abortions, Planned Parenthood actively works around them or recommends places where young women can go so they can go outside and around the law. Anytime you have an exception, you know, like let's say we can only kill a Jew if his father is a criminal? Well, you've taken away the personhood of that Jew, and really every Jew. You know? Or you can only kill a black if the father is a criminal. Well, now you've dehumanized all blacks. Because then the people who want to kill Jews and blacks will use these exceptions, will manipulate the law to kill the people they want to kill. And that's what's happening right now in the abortion holocaust throughout the world. Because it's like my wife told me, in Japan, abortion is technically illegal, but they have exceptions. And so everyone simply makes sure that every abortion fits into those exceptions, and there's as much abortion as you want in Japan. It's just sad. The Hyde Amendment. Yeah, nice work, Republicans. Thank you for taking away the humanity of innocent people. It's really borne a lot of fruit. All right, now let's move. Domestic Tranquility File, I don't think I even have time to do it this week, and I really don't want to do it. Let's lay that aside here. Let's go to the war file. Osama bin Laden has allegedly made another tape. The Al-Qaeda leader allegedly demanded that European nations withdraw their troops from Afghanistan in a new audio tape aired last week. It's funny, the tape was released on the internet with a background picture of bin Laden. So, you know, Osama bin Laden is talking from the grave. Of course, you know that I assert Osama bin Laden's been dead for quite some time. If either he's dead or maybe he's gone prematurely gray and he just doesn't want to be on video anymore. I'm not sure what Osama bin Laden's problem is. But anyway, he's demanding that the Europeans withdraw. And apparently the Germans have gone ahead and elected what they call a conservative. And so the Germans didn't get as scared as the Spanish, I suppose. Zbigniew Brzezinski, the National Security Advisor during the administration of President Jimmy Carter, he says the United States should shoot down Israeli jets if Israel chooses to take military action against a nuclear project in Iran. That's right, a former security advisor to the United States president says that we should shoot. You know, the Israelis would have to fly over Iraq. And so Brzezinski says, well, if they try, we'll shoot them down. I don't even think Barry Ho is that demented. Let's all hope and pray that the Jews bomb the Iranian nuclear facilities as soon as possible and as effectively as possible. That's about it. I don't know. I've lost my motivation this week. There's so many big things going on in my own little personal circle of friends that the news of the world seems to pale in comparison. I'm sorry. Oh, wait a minute. There's this story from Chicago. Chicago cab drivers, they're looking for a fare hike there in Chicago. Let's see, what do they want? They think they're working too hard for too little money, so they want a dollar fee for every additional passenger, a $1.50 fee for the convenience of using a credit card, $1 for every cab ride dispatched by telephone, and a $50 cleanup fee for drunk passengers who puke in the back of a cab. Now that, I think, $50, that seems reasonable. I mean, someone's got to hose all that puke out of the back of the cab. One cab driver says if somebody throws up in the back of the cab, it's no laughing matter to that cab driver. He's got to take a couple of hours to clean the cab out and get it detailed. And he says, do you know how hard it is to get that smell out? That was cab driver George Lutfala there in Chicago. Mayor Daley says he's sympathetic to the fare hike petition, noting that cab drivers are ambassadors for the city of Chicago. Hey, I've taken a lot of cabs in Chicago. They're more like ambassadors for Pakistan. Maybe Al-Qaeda. They're like airport bus drivers in Denver. Anyway, but the Americans barfing in the back of these cabs are not exactly good ambassadors for the United States either. So I guess it cuts both ways. That's the worldview for this week, folks. Thanks for joining us. I want to thank everyone out at KGov Radio, Denver Bible Church, my good friends at Personhood USA, American Right to Life, and Theology Online, and of course my other brother, Daryl, who makes it all happen here at the Weekly Worldview Studios. And I want to thank Lila Rose and Personhood California. If you want to find out how to get involved in California, go to Personhood, California, and sign up to get involved, because the tide is turning. So, may the grace of God go with you, and may the peace of Jesus Christ be upon you.